this week, what has become of that course of moral instruction veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols that Freemasonry is supposed to be? Has Freemasonry lost its Masonic education edge? Are we too hung up on crafted programs created by our membership committees that change every single year? What could be a simple way of ensuring Masonic education finds its way to every member? Then we've got an all-new Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, in which he discusses the topic of heaven and earth. A supreme philosophical outlook at what God is and how the end of time as we know it will happen and what that means for us. Philosophically, of course. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 539. I want to go ahead and thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners for all of your help in producing this Masonic podcast dedicated to Masonic education and to the topic of Freemasonry in general, and also for anyone out there who is just interested in Freemasonry as a passive interest or a seasoned member. If you want to learn more about how you can assist this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. I'm very happy to say that if you're listening to this on Sunday, the chances are I just got back from the Valley of Danville, Illinois, where I was presenting and hung out with my good friend and brother Darren Lainers, and I even had my son with me, my youngest son, and we had a great time, most likely, recording this in advance, but I think I can definitely say we had a great time. Upcoming presentations. I'll be doing a presentation at a table lodge for Cary Grove 1157 on April 20th, and my topic of discussion will be Worldwide Brotherhood. And then shortly after that, I'll be doing something here local for Sequoit Masonic Lodge, likely on a Saturday in May. I think we're still nailing down the details, and also I will be at Manassa Lodge in Manassa, Virginia. So that's going to be a good time. I'll be hanging out with our good friend and brother Joe Martinez. So look for details on that coming up. But now it's time to get into the education. So last week we had an author, took a little break in our breakdown of Whither Are We Traveling? But this week we have to get right back into it. So here we go. Whither Are We Traveling? Part 9. By Midnight Freemason contributor, worshipful brother Darren A. Lainers. As we continue to explore Dwight L. Smith's seminal work, Whither Are We Traveling?, we begin to explore his answers to the 10 questions he posed for self-examination of the state of ancient craft Freemasonry in 1963. The questions he asked then are as important and relevant as they are now. This week, we look at question number 8. What has become of that course of moral instruction veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols that Freemasonry is supposed to be? Most worshipful Brother Smith begins this section by talking about how there was a young master who was determined to take the admonition of giving good and wholesome instruction seriously. He ordered a copy of Carl H. Claudy's The Master's Book, which became his personal volume of sacred law. He had underlined 3 lines in the book and lived by these. He claims that following the advice of these 3 lines brought Masons who hadn't been in lodge for years back regularly for light and more light and further light. Nothing in 25 years has changed his conviction that the formula that Claudy laid out would not fill the sidelines with regularity. That young master was Dwight L. Smith, and the 3 lines are, one thing and one thing only a Masonic lodge can give its members which they can get nowhere else in the world. That one thing is Freemasonry. The masters whose instruction program is strictly Masonic has to send it to the basement for extra chairs for most of his meetings. He goes on to state that he knew little to nothing about adult education. The only equipment he possessed was a little imagination and a resolute purpose to avoid standard schoolroom methods. He ruled out long-winded lectures, stunts, or cheap entertainment in favor of teaching by means of symbols, parables, allegories, and legends. He claims that the brethren came because they wanted to, not because they were a captive audience. And most importantly, that he had to send out for extra chairs, like Claudy had claimed he would. Most worshipful Brother Smith then asks, come to think about it, has not the master of every lodge an obligation to give the craft good and wholesome instruction? He then answers by saying that he is proceeding under the assumption that every candidate for the degree sincerely desires the light Freemasonry has to offer him and expects to receive it. But then what happens is that we memorize and recite. And if memorization and reciting does not appeal to him, that we have nothing further to offer. Then he states that we wash our hands of him, and he hears about the other organizations that elaborate on the three degrees, and he turns to them for the further light that his lodge should have provided, or as he puts it, he asks for bread, we give him a stone. Dwight then goes on to state that we are weak in form and substance. He also respectfully submits that we fall short at the Grand Lodge level where the designs are placed on the trestle board, and at the lodge level where the designs are executed. He then states the ramifications of the subject are too great to discuss at length, and that he can only plant the seed. He then says, let's face it then. 1. The word. The very term Masonic education is a liability. A frightening word suggestive of impractical theories and dull abstractions. What a blessing it would be if some creative soul could coin another Masonic light, or advancement, or instruction would be an improvement. 2. Our designs. There are too many systems, too hastily conceived, too much running wildly hither and yon in search of bright ideas. We pursue Masonic educational systems in the same manner that teenagers pursue fads. Let a bright idea be advanced in one jurisdiction, and a score of grandmasters will cry, lo, it is here. Like sheep, they rush to follow the bellwether. And why? If Freemasonry is universal, do we need 57 varieties of instruction programs? After all, Master Masons respond in much the same manner the nation over. 3. Our architects. They are too amateurish. An effective program for further light cannot be designed by whoever happens to be officers of a Grand Lodge in a given year. It is a job for men with special talents. Always there should be one or two men with down-to-earth experience in adult education, a public relations man to interpret human likes and dislikes, a newspaper man to tell the story in everyday English, and all should be thoroughly grounded in the fundamentals of Freemasonry. 4. Our working tools. One of the marks of an amateur writer or speaker is that he attempts to tell everything he knows each time he writes or speaks. With rare exception, the printed materials for Masonic education programs are like that. They insist on telling everything, forbidding in length and appalling in scope. They are too ponderous, too dull, too windy. Ever hear of the Tractarians? We could well emulate their example. I agree that the term Masonic education is frightening to many. I think Masonic education is frightening because it is misunderstood. I have a personal belief that anytime Masonic education is mentioned, many Freemasons immediately have their eyes glazed over because they have no idea what it is, or they immediately have visions of skulls, chambers of reflection, and esotericism dancing in their heads. However, I don't think renaming it to be called Masonic Light, Masonic Advancement, Masonic Instruction improves matters. I believe it muddies the waters. In fact, when I think of Masonic Instruction, I think about the same memorization and recruiting and reciting that most worship Brother Smith rallied against above. Masonic Instruction teaches you how to be a Mason within the lodge room. This consists of the skills of reciting rituals and the proper floor work that are needed to properly operate and do all things that are done within the lodge room. Masonic education teaches you how to be a Mason outside of the lodge room. Masonic education is what happens in the degrees during the explanatory lectures. It is the why behind the how. While Masonic instruction teaches you how to walk and talk in the lodge, Masonic education teaches you not only why you walk and talk that way, but also how the lessons of Freemasonry can be applied in a profane world. This is often where some lines blur. It is my personal belief that Masonic education does not need to be strictly Masonic to teach our members how to be better men outside of the lodge room. Skills, like teaching younger members how to change a tire on a car, or teaching older members how to identify potential fraudulent calls, texts, and/or emails, are not Masonic, yet they teach the membership valuable skills that improve their individual knowledge, and skills that can be passed on to their loved ones, friends, and family. By improving our members' life skills, we are practicing brotherly love in a way that isn't directly Masonic. As for Most Worshipful Brother Smith's commentary about our designs, our architects, and our working tools, I believe they are interconnected at least in my personal experience. Let me explain. I currently serve the Grand Lodge of Illinois as the Area Education Officer for the Eastern Masonic Area. This entitles me to sit on the Grand Lodge Committee for Masonic Education. I am one of the architects, along with the committee chair and other area education officers and members of the committee. This being said, the committee chair reports to the Grand Master and the Grand Lodge officers, whereas the area education officers report to each area deputy Grand Master. The area education officers used to report to the state education officer who headed the committee and reported to the Grand Master. In my short time as an area education officer, I have had two state education officers. Also, every 2 years, there is a new Grand Master, and each has their own ideas of what education should be or shouldn't be. What I am stating is that it's difficult to be an architect to design an educational program when you have little to no autonomy to do so, and or the direction of what the educational program keeps changing. In an ideal world, what would happen is that instead of the committee chairman being told what subjects the education committee should be working on, the committee should be given the authority to design a program to present to the Grand Master. The Grand Master then would have the authority to approve the program or send it back to the committee with his suggestions. Once the program was approved, the Grand Master would back it with his authority as much as he backs any other program that the Grand Lodge puts forward. In my experience, the committee's tasks are prioritized by Grand Master, which, because he is the Grand Master, is within his right. But as most worshipful Brother Smith states, an effective program for Further Light cannot be designed by whoever happens to be officers of a Grand Lodge in a given year. To further complicate matters, we have other Grand Lodge committees and officers sending out communication to the Masonic leadership in our state that has lists of topics that the area deputy Grand Masters are having their education officers work on. In turn, the area deputy Grand Masters believe that because the email came from a Grand Lodge official, it is exactly what the educational committee is doing and expectations are set on what I, as an area education officer, should be focused on. While the message of the communication was in the right place before any communication is sent out, they should have consulted the education committee chair to align the goals. In not doing so, the person I report to directly, the area deputy Grand Master, has a belief that I am doing the five things in the email that the committee chairman sent out. Even though many of the things that he sent out, while not incorrect, are contradictory to the list of items that the Grand Master wants us to focus on, when other Grand Lodge officials and officers are dictating their own agendas by sending out their own communications about Masonic education, we are forced to then address those items as well. When most worshipful Brother Smith talks about our designs, architects, and our working tools, I couldn't agree more. There is obviously a disconnect between what we as the education committee want to do and what others want us to do. As I have shown in my own personal experience, there are too many architects that are putting too many designs on the trestle board. Don't get me wrong, I'm very proud of what our committee has done so far. We have been publishing a monthly electronic magazine called The Lyceum, which provides ready-to-use short educational pieces which have questions for discussion in the lodge to every Master Mason in Illinois. However, I worry that it's only a matter of time before this working tool is put aside because our ever-changing priorities change again. Smith continues, again, let's face it. One, our unfinished labors, by and large, instruction is not a part of the program in the average lodge. Such efforts as may be made are sporadic, conceived as an afterthought, treated as a stepchild. We have not caught fire with the possibilities, for we are so obsessed with question and answer memory work that we think all instruction begins and ends in a catechism. Nothing could be further from the truth. Two, many are exceedingly anxious. We know not the meaning of patience. When we do attempt to provide good and wholesome instruction, we try to do too much too rapidly. A first grader is not handed a set of books which will tell him all he needs to know for a high school diploma. Rarely is a young Mason a 90-day wonder. Yet, when we instruct at all, we give him huge doses without regard to his needs, likes, or dislikes. And we expect them to do the work of a vitamin B12 shot. It isn't that simple. Rubbish in the temple, number 3. Regrettably, too many of our programs are tied to stunts and cheap entertainment used as bait. Masonic teaching must be Masonic or it is of no avail. We defeat the purpose when we insult the intelligence of the man who seeks. In my personal experience, I agree that Masonic education is not prioritized.
I, along with other authors on this site, have written numerous articles on the subject. The sad fact is that many men do not want Masonic education. Many brethren are content to have their lodge be a social club and fail to understand the lessons of our degrees that challenge us to become better men. The only way to give these brethren education would be to force it upon them by having the Grand Master issue an edict, which won't accomplish anything other than having them go through the motions of education, which will only leave their members worse off than had they not attempted it. As for most worshipful Brother Smith believing that many of our education offices are anxious, I'm in disagreement. I don't know that they are anxious. I think that they are not properly instructed in how to be educators. In my own personal experience, this is something that I have to do a better job of as an area education officer. However, many of the brethren that are being appointed to be district education officers do not have any desire to be educators, nor do they want to be. They are essentially appointed to be the right-hand man of the district deputy grand master. So, if the DDGM is open to having an education in their district, then, as the area education officer, I have an opportunity. However, that is usually the exception, not the rule. I disagree with most worshipful Brother Smith when he states that Masonic teaching must be Masonic. As I expressed above, it is my belief that any skill that is taught, which helps our members to be better men outside of the lodge room, even if that skill might not directly be Masonic, is still viable. As illustrated in my example above, it is my belief that many of our members can benefit from learning skills that might not be purely Masonic, but that help them as individuals. Is teaching a member how to tie a bow tie or how to buy a suit Masonic? No. However, it helps expand their knowledge, which then expands their wardrobe choices when one goes to a lodge event or in real life. In fact, I think that teaching these life skills can be tied into different Masonic lessons given enough effort. Most worshipful Brother Smith then asks, then where do we start? 1. Most important of all, Masonic light must come from the East. Instruction provided by a teacher who knows less than his pupil is neither good nor wholesome. If the blind lead the blind, both shall fall in the ditch. It has long been my contention that the place to insist upon proficiency is in the man who wears the hat and holds the gavel. If that means a minimum standard, training courses, written and oral exams, then let's have them. I would have made a much better master if I had had that kind of preparation. 2, our approach must be an intelligent one. The program must have diversity, the doses must be small, and it must avoid dullness as a plague. Men of high intellectual attainment should have study clubs. Those of limited academic training should have capsules. And for those in the wide range in between, the possibilities are unlimited. 3, instruction must be lifted to a place of honor and respectability in the lodge affairs. Above all, it should be geared to the hour of refreshment, not to the lecture room nor the graduate seminar. Let self-improvement become a privilege to be enjoyed and not a chore to be endured. 4, we need to discard about 9/10 of our curriculum materials. Masonic authors whose works are authoritative and have human interest appeal could be numbered almost on the fingers of one hand. With profound apologies to local writers and compilers in every state, I maintain we could do better to stick to the classics. 5, any program of further light must be pursued continuously and with infinite patience. The parable of a sower always should be the theme. Even though great quantities of seed will be wasted, some will take root and bear fruit, and that sum is worth all the effort. 6, and then humbly begging pardon of the sacred cows. If plans and programs and systems there must be, there is only one which has stood the test of time. It is that which is carried on within the framework of the lodge, inside its four walls, by its authority, under its control, and responsible to it. Nothing should be left to whim or fancy of individuals who may be ill-prepared, inaccurate, or irresponsible. Textbooks, manuals, short courses, schools, forums, these should not operate as substitutes for the work of the lodge. We can only hope that such tools may assist and inspire, but the stones must be hewn and squared in the quarries where they are raised. Visionary? Impossible of attainment? Of course it is. The temple within the hearts of men is never finished. No one has suggested that the building of human character is a quick and easy job. Who among us has faith to, quote-unquote, lay his course by a star which he has never seen, to dig by the divining rod for springs he may never reach? End quote. While I agree that the worshipful master of each lodge needs to prioritize Masonic education, I disagree that they should be solely the only person in the lodge responsible for dispensing light. In Illinois, the lodge education officer should be solely responsible for this. However, if the worshipful master has not appointed one or a committee to handle it, then he is that by default. I agree that the approach should be intelligent. However, I don't believe that having these three separate educational structures in the form of study clubs for more intelligent members, capsules for those of limited academic training, and then another program for those in between does anything but cause disharmony by not allowing education to happen on the level. Those that want to learn more will seek out that knowledge. The best education is that which presents a subject and then stimulates discussion of that subject among all the brethren. By allowing every member of the lodge involved, not only do we learn important things about each other, but we also create that cement of brotherly love and affection. I agree that Masonic education should be given a place of honor in the lodge, and therefore it should be moved to the beginning of the stated meeting. I don't believe that having it during the hour of refreshment is going to do this unless it is part of the festive board we discussed in our previous article. The only way to guarantee the participation of everyone is to prioritize it as being the first item of business after opening the lodge stated meeting. As for curriculum materials, I believe that we should not limit the imagination or the resources for the educational officers. I don't believe that in 1963 most worshipful Brother Smith could have envisioned anything like the internet, whereas in some jurisdictions there are standard programs of education. In those that don't have that luxury, we need to be able to draw upon every possible resource to allow our educators to dispense Masonic light. Lastly, I do agree that Masonic education must show patience and must be continuous. I have shared above how having changing priorities can damage the process of establishing an educational program. I do agree that education should not be a substitute for the other work of the lodge. It should be complementary to that work. I also agree that, quote, the temple within the hearts of men is never finished. No one has suggested that the building of human character is a quick and easy job, end quote. This is why Masonic education is important. How can we make better men of our members without some form of Masonic education? In my next article, I will explore the next question most worshipful Brother Smith poses, which is question 9. Hasn't the so-called century of the common man contributed to making our fraternity a little too common? Darren A. Laners, Past Master. Well, there you have this rad piece where we're continuing this idea, and I have a lot of mixed feelings about this particular one. I don't necessarily agree with Darren about bringing the education to the forefront of the meeting. I'm more of a have a hard stop time for the meeting regardless. That way you prioritize the bulk of the time for Masonic education. But there's more than one way to skin a cat. My question for the Craftsman Plus is, have you ever presented Masonic education for your lodge? And if you have, were you asked to do it, or was it something that you sought out to do independently and then presented it to the master and the lodge? And extra points if you tell us a funny story about these types of scenarios. I think there's always a good story out there, so I look forward to reading those, and I'll share my own. Next up, let's go to this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Geometry, the first and noblest of sciences, is the basis on which the superstructure of Freemasonry is erected. By it, we discover the wisdom, power, and goodness of the grand architect of the universe. By it, we discover how the planets move in their respective orbits and demonstrate their various revolutions. We, as Freemasons, see a close and direct relationship between the functioning of the physical universe and God. After all, we do in fact refer to Him as the grand architect of the universe. He created it, constructed it, runs it, and that's all there is to it. In fact, you don't have to be a Freemason to hold that belief. We are so in awe of this creation that we ask, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars, which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him? This belief doesn't just come out of thin air. We see so many things around us that tend to confirm there is something intelligent, perhaps divine, that is in control. In the classic double slit experiment, for example, we find electrons that behave one way if someone is watching and differently without an observer. Or, any scientist will tell you, we know there is a force holding galaxies together. We have no idea about its nature and call it dark matter. If we draw a line in the sand, as some do, and say those paranoid electrons behaving that way indicate a form of divine intelligence, or buy into the common claim that dark matter is, in fact, God holding the universe together, we set ourselves up. There are plenty of examples where those lines have been drawn only to be erased by scientific discoveries. In the 17th century, people saw the heavenly bodies moving around the earth and said they do that because God put the earth and mankind at the center of everything. Then, a couple of guys named Galileo and Copernicus came along and burst that bubble. If we think those electrons and dark matter prove God exists, what will we do when a modern-day Copernicus finds a scientific causation? It's easy to fall into that trap. If we keep doing that, and then back off on our definition and understanding of God with every scientific discovery, we seemingly wind up with what astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson calls an ever-receding God. Maybe it should be the other way around. In other words, if we discover some phenomenon is not caused by a mysterious action of God, does that not also teach us a little more about what God is? The second degree lecture teaches us we should embrace the sciences. As those discoveries come to light, the fact is God isn't receding. With each new discovery, we learn more, not less, about the true nature of God. The spiritual, not the physical, is what's important. Read our ritual carefully. It says, by geometry, meaning science, we discover God's wisdom, power, and goodness. Not that we use it to discover God himself. Scientists have proven the universe is expanding at an ever-increasing rate. This has led to a theory about its end which says it will just keep expanding until the stars all burn out and the universe will die a dark and cold death. If you're looking for an area where science and religion, or spirituality, are in agreement, look to Matthew 24, verse 35. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Don't get hung up about the physical universe. Both God and the scientists say it won't be around forever, but God's words, those spiritual lessons, will be. Let's not worry about the fact that God didn't put the earth at the center of the universe, or he may or may not be manifest in a bunch of shy electrons. Let's use his spiritual teachings to learn how to live our lives, improve them, and the lives of others. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
another amazing installment of the Masonic Minute with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison. Heaven and Earth is the title of this one, and it might be my favorite one outside of the first one he ever did. And I really feel like this is exactly what a lot of people might need to hear. It's a poetic telling of the bonding between what we call science and what we call philosophy or religion or pick a name. But however you look at it, you have to agree that this was inspiring. If you see illustrious Brother Harrison out there somewhere, shake his hand, give him an elbow bump, a fist bump, whatever it is, and tell him thanks. This is the 164th Masonic Minute he's produced for us, and we just can't say thank you enough for the history and the lessons and the philosophy that he's brought all these weeks. So thank you very much to illustrious Brother Harrison. If you're interested in more, please check out his YouTube channel, which is the Masonic Minute, or the 1 Minute Mason, rather. And you can also check out the Whence Came You YouTube channel as well, where we upload his videos with pictures and things as a separate video, so you can just line up all of the Masonic Minutes. We've got them all tagged as part of a playlist. So please check those out, as well as his books and the Missouri Lodge of Research. All the information for all of this will be in the show notes. And you can find all his books in the bookstore on WCYpodcast.com. We're going to forego the tarot card reading this week. We'll be back with that next week. So one more time, I want to thank the producers, fellows, and contributors, and the legacy partners of the WCY Podcast. We cannot do this without you. If you're interested in how to help this program grow and expand, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can help. Alternatively, there are some items that we do sell that you can pick up, and you'll be able to support the show in that way. Also, all of our books and things that we've linked are of Amazon affiliate linked, so a couple pennies comes back to the show. You pay the same amount you normally would. Amazon gets their dollar, and you know, we get a couple pennies, but it adds up, so we really appreciate it. I also want to give a thanks to the Valley of Danville, Brother Darren Laners, Brother Sean McBride, and all of the members of the Valley down there for having me out and doing the talk recently. It was fantastic. Thank you so much. Until next week, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.